All right, good morning, everyone. Please be seated.
Good morning.
Okay, this is in the matter of Northwest Territorial Mint. We're here today on the issue of whether the estate may sell dyes and related items, tooling, we'll generally refer to as dyes, but as Mr. Hyatt points out, it's broader than just dyes. So, but to be clear, when I use the term dyes, I'm referring to everything that might encompass the intellectual property of customers or others. And that's the issue for this morning, trying to separate it from the question of ownership of the dyes itself, which will be resolved for another day. So to the extent you've made those arguments, those are preserved for another day, but I'm going to try to separate it just from the intellectual property issues. So I did see the briefing, and I guess I'll hear from Mr. New first, and then I'll hear from any parties that may object. No one's on the phone. Is there anyone on the phone? All right. Wasn't expecting anyone. So I'll start with you, Mr. New. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. And first, let me apologize due to a miscommunication with my staff. I think my brief yesterday was filed a couple of hours late.
I don't mean to be dismissive, but it didn't say a whole lot.
Right.
I mean, as you know, it just said, and I understand the argument what you're making. So it was late, but no harm, no foul, really.
And I do need to relate to the court, Your Honor, that we have resolved our issues with the Boy Scouts of America.
All right.
Brook Green Gardens and Mr. Hyatt's client, Pan American.
Oh, all right.
So I know Mr. Chickich is not going to be here this morning, at least that's my understanding.
All right. He represents the Boy Scouts, so we've reached an agreement.
Correct.
With them. All right.
Right.
All right. Thank you.
And we'll be bringing those before the court.
All right. Then please proceed.
Absolutely, Your Honor. So, you know, the issue really, as I understand it, is the argument that had been raised in some of the earlier briefing that somehow because underlying artwork that is embodied in a dye, that someone may have an intellectual property interest in that work, that is so intrinsic in the dye that the dye cannot be separated from the work. And so we've briefed the law on the issue, Your Honor, and I think it's fairly settled. It's really black letter law. We cited 17 U.S.C. 202, which is the section of the Copyright Act, the applicable section, which provides that ownership of a copyright or exclusive rights under a copyright is distinct from ownership of any material object in which the work is embodied. And we cited case law to that same effect, in which the court had allowed, or at least had determined, that certain, I believe, there were master recordings. This was in the Sony Music Entertainment case, were property of the estate and could be sold by the estate. And it was a similar argument that had been raised in that particular case. The responsive briefing, I think, that was submitted by the parties who objected, doesn't cite any case law or any statutory law to the contrary. And I think the argument really that they raise is this issue of do they have an intellectual property right in the work itself? And that really is not, I think, a relevant issue to the question of can the material object, i.e. the dye, be sold. I mean, clearly a object that embodies intellectual property can be sold. And I think I cited some examples, albums, those sorts of things. And frankly, all those can be used to infringe on intellectual property rights. I can take a CD and I can, you know, rip it onto my computer and pirate it. That doesn't mean the CD can't be sold. And I think those are two separate and distinct issues. We're not arguing that anybody doesn't have an intellectual property right in the work itself. Certainly there are circumstances where the mints artists or Modelic's artists created the work, and in those situations, the intellectual property rights, unless it was work for hire, would vest in the mint. But undoubtedly, there are circumstances where work was created by third-party artists or by customers, and they would have an intellectual property right in the work itself. We're not seeking to sell the dyes for the purpose of somebody infringing on those intellectual property rights. And frankly, Metalcraft, if you look at the Metalcraft sale motion, they have explicitly agreed that they will not use the dyes for any to create any product without the express consent of the customer. The value in the dyes, frankly, Your Honor, you can think of it almost as a customer list. It's the value of the dyes is being able to form a relationship with a potential customer, and then at the request of that customer, if they want to produce product from those dyes, that would be the use of it. So there's really not any question, and I think we're in agreement, that Metalcraft, or whoever the ultimate purchaser is, can't use the dyes to infringe on intellectual property rights. But that's not the issue. The fact of the matter is that these dyes are material objects, and whether or not they embody a copyrighted work, they are, to the extent that the estate owns them, the estate can sell them.
All right. Thank you, Mr. New. I do have a lot of questions. What I'll do is I'll hear from the other parties, and then I'll ask all my questions. So who would like to go next? Ms. Kaplan? All right.
I'm bringing my water. I have
yes.
That,
yes, you may. Or you can even sit down if you prefer.
No, it's okay. I'm up here.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I have a sinus infection and throat, so if I am clearing my throat, I'm sorry.
No, that's right. As long as you keep your distance, that's
no, right. It's not contagious. I wouldn't have. I would not have shown up. You know, the trustee has asserted.
Well, I'm sorry. Before I sorry to interrupt, but so Mr. New said that at least one of your clients have reached an agreement.
Yes, Green Gardens.
All right.
Has reached an agreement.
All right. So you're mm-hmm. here behalf. Can just for the record, who
sorry.
Do you represent this
yeah,
morning?
Yeah, Michelle Carmody Kaplan. I'm representing Heidi Wasweet, Gary Marks, and the New York Numismatic Club.
All right. Thank you.
With respect to, I mean, the trustee in their initial briefing said that. Kind of made a blanket statement that, and he's backtracked on that, that no one else has any intellectual property interest in these dyes, citing the any dyes that were created by the, I'm just going to use mint to encompass everybody,
right.
By their artists. But in fact, the U.S. copyright laws prior to January 1st of 1978 did not state that. So for the New York Numismatic Club, any dyes, even if the mint commissioned, if they commissioned the mint to create the dye, under the black letter law applicable at the time, the copyright vested with the New York Numismatic Club. Our client's biggest issue is they don't want a court order that is selling these dyes free and clear. We've been told, oh, talk to Mr. Moran. And Mr. Moran may be a very honorable, lovely person, but we can't guarantee that he's going to be running the company forever. He's not immortal. Bankruptcy, as we all know, bankruptcies and receiverships do happen. So there is a possibility that somebody else could come in and control these dyes, and they may not be as honorable and respectful of IP rights and be selling them overseas. And another class of, I don't want to say creditors, interested parties would be the actual coin collectors. We haven't talked about them, but a lot of these are limited edition runs, and they're actually worth quite a bit of money. And so if all of a sudden the dyes were to fall into less respectful hands and IP rights are violated, their value of their collection could go down, and then we would like our clients to have the right to be able to go back to any purchaser and say, we can sue you because our intellectual property rights have been violated. The dyes themselves are really just useful artifacts, and they only function to display the art that was created. And the trustee has already conceded that others may have intellectual property rights in the copyrights there. I don't believe we had any trademark issues. And so I guess we did propose some language at the back of our motion, and that came from, actually we kind of just lifted that from the Borders bankruptcy in the Southern District of New York. And I believe Mr. Powers, maybe Judge Peck or someone, but it came from that order. And just something to protect the intellectual property rights of the individuals.
All right, thank you.
If you have any questions.
I am going to have questions. I'll hear from Mr. Hyatt, and then I'll hear from Mr. New in reply, and then I'll ask my questions. Mr. Hyatt, anything you'd like to add?
Your Honor, as Mr. New indicated, we resolved our issues. It was done approximately 10 o'clock last night. We've got a few other things that we're discussing, and if for some reason that the settlement is not approved or we have problems, I just wanted to make sure that I was here to asked the court if we could reserve the issues relating to Pan American Silver. I think that they're unique from most of the claims that the court's going to hear. We had actual agreements that discussed the rights of the parties. We had a program that was a limited program, and the dyes were supposed to be returned. So I think it's different from the rest of the issues that I've heard. And while I think the legal issues are very interesting, if the court would allow us to reserve those rights and those claims pending approval of a settlement, that would be the reason I'm here today.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Hyatt. And I think that's fair resolution. And as I said, the ownership issues are not being decided today. And I think a lot of your issues you raised in your brief are unique to your client because you have written agreements and I think go more toward the ownership of the dye. Today is more generally, can any of the dyes be sold given the IP issues? So yes, all your arguments are reserved in the event, hopefully unlikely event, you are not able to reach your final resolution. So thank you. Ms. Carey, you just walked in. Would you like to be heard this morning? All right, well, please come on up.
With that, Your Honor, if I can be excused.
You may be, appreciate you it. May be excused, Mr. Hyatt. Thank you. All right, good morning, Ms. Carey.
Good morning.
And can you just state your name for the record?
Betty Carey, C-A-R-E-Y.
Yes. And Ms. Carey, you did file a response to the motion. Let me just make clear what we're talking about today, because I did read what you wrote, and I understand your concerns and your objections. Today's issue, though, is a lot more narrow, and it is really whether or not the trustee can sell dyes that have intellectual property associated with it. That's the only issue I'm hearing this morning. You have other concerns about whether the trustee owns it. You also have concerns about your claims and the inventory. That's not going to be argued this morning. None of that's going to be argued this morning. So do you have any arguments regarding intellectual property issues, copyright, trademark issues that relate to the dyes that you had produced by the Mint or Medallic?
Yes, I do.
All right.
I had an agreement also. I don't know if it was the same with everybody, but my agreement was that I owned the intellectual properties of my dye and the dye itself, and that it was stored there if I wanted it to be stored there, which I did for safekeeping and for further usage. And then without stepping on the toes of what you just told me, my further issue is that I believe there's fraud within the court, within the trustee's position, and that might very well overlap into the dyes as well.
Well, as I read what you wrote and what I heard you say last time, it's not related to the issues this morning. I understand you think that you've not been received accurate or honest responses regarding the inventory, but that's not an issue today. You believe that you own your dyes. That's another issue that is going to be decided another day. That's, we have a sale hearing on Friday, and people who believe that the dyes can't be sold still can make that argument on Friday. But today is just very limited to whether or not, if you have intellectual property in a dye, can the trustee sell that? And this applies to everybody's dye, not just to yours. All right, so that's, the fraud issues are not before me today. All right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. What are galvanos, by the way? That was a word I had seen in the briefing I had not heard of before, and I saw in the amended metal craft motion. Is that another type of?
My understanding, and to be honest, I just learned this last night as well. So my understanding is it is a plaster that's then used to make the dye, and so it's whatever image is embodied in the dye. It's a big plaster that somehow is then.
That's what
used
I think.
To manufacture the dye.
I think that's what is given. So if I think of an artist like a bas relief sculptor.
Okay.
They're going to make a galvanos, and then if they own the copyright, they're going to send that to the mint, and the mint's going to use that to be able to create the dye that then will strike the coins.
All right. So
is my understanding.
And so the mint or medallic, and again, when I say the mint, I mean both mint and medallic on all prior iterations of those two entities. They retain possession of the galvanos and sculpts and specimens. I'm reading through here. So is that?
It's my understanding that they have some. I don't know that they have ones for every die.
All right.
That's a question I've not asked.
But those are to be sold as well, at least to Metalcraft.
Right.
Is my understanding. All right. Okay, thank you. That was just a technical issue. Mr. New, why don't I hear from you in any reply?
Sure.
And then I'll ask my questions.
Yeah, absolutely, Ron. I'll just keep it brief. I just wanted one point of clarification. I think Ms. Kaplan had indicated we backtracked on this assertion that people don't have intellectual property rights in the dyes. And I just wanted to clarify that wasn't what I meant to express by that assertion. What I was just saying is that there are certainly instances where people may think that they have intellectual property rights in the work, and they don't, right? So as a threshold issue, the objecting parties may or may not have intellectual property rights in the work itself. I don't think that's particularly relevant for the issue at hand is, can the material object be sold, the dye?
Right.
And I would just quote from the Clark Entertainment case, where the court says it's well settled that intellectual property rights are separate and distinct from the material objects in which the work is embodied, so that the author has the power to convey ownership in the material object, e.g. a book, while reserving common law copyright, e.g. the right to publish, reproduce, or exploit the prose. So in this circumstance, I think just to the extent someone had a copyright interest in the work itself, they would retain that copyright interest. We're not seeking to sell these dyes free and clear of underlying intellectual property rights in the work itself.
All right, thank you, Mr. New. This is a very interesting issue. Let me just say where I'm coming from, and then I'll ask you some questions, primarily to you, Mr. New. I see this as coming down to whether this situation is closer to the Clark Entertainment case or to the audio fidelity case. And just as a baseline, unlike a tape or a CD, when I buy the CD or tape, I can listen to it and it has value just from listening to it. And I sell it to somebody else, they can get value from it just by listening to it. That seems different from the dye. Now, maybe the dye or those related type items have some collectible value, but my understanding is really the value is only in the use of them in reproducing coins. And that's different from an audio tape or an audio recording or a CD or a book. And I guess a book, you can pick it up and read. You can't, now if I resell it to you, Mr. New, you can't then reproduce it, but you can get value from it from reading it. If I sell you the dye though, what good is the dye unless you reproduce something or use it for something? And if someone owns the IP, then you may be violating their rights. I fully agree and understand that, and you make a good point. If you can't sell the underlying item because there's IP associated with it, probably prohibit a lot of 363 sales, just a ton. You use great examples, books, tapes, cars, most everything has some sort of IP associated with it, and trustees and people outside of bankruptcy sell those all the time. But this just strikes me, just the item itself is different than the book or the tape that can be used and value retained just by using it for its intended purpose. The issue in Clark Entertainment was, if I recall, the court had issued an injunction at the request of Sony to not reproduce these items. And the court said, that's fine. The trustee can sell these things, but it's still subject to the injunction, just like you'd sell the tape. Audio Fidelity, though, was different in that there was a ruling that no one could ever listen to what was on the tapes. And I don't recall why, if it was something really awful, but no one was allowed to ever. And the court said, because putting that into the stream of market would just be inviting somebody to violate the court order, the court said, I'm sorry, you got to destroy these things. You can't resell them. And I got to admit, I'm somewhere in between those two cases, because if Mr. Moran, and we're using Mr. Moran, but it's Metalcraft, and as Ms. Carmody say, Mr. Moran, we don't know him, but take him at his word that he's agreeing not to violate anyone's intellectual property rights and will not reproduce or use the dyes in violation of their rights without their, or strike that, would not use the dyes without their express written consent, bless you. What if he sells the company, or what if he resells the dyes? And I know Mr. Hyatt isn't here, but he had in his response, he had said wanted a prohibition on the buyer from reselling them. I'm not sure that one is feasible, and two, this court could enforce that, and three, what if Mr. Moran sells his business and decides to retire on the shores of South America? There's really, it would be hard to enforce it. So that's kind of the concern I have. So help me through with this issue, and it's really the idea of putting this into the market, these dyes into the market, where the only purpose is to strike objects from them, and you need the consent, I think, from the IP owner every time.
Well, Your Honor, and I would, I think I would maybe take exception isn't the right term, but that the only use of these dyes, obviously the dyes are used to produce coins. That's correct, but that's not the interest that Metalcraft or other potential buyers have in the dyes. The interest is the ability to create a relationship with a customer. These dyes are of significant value to the estate, and to the extent the estate owns them, then they're transferred to Metalcraft. The value to Metalcraft is then being able to say, all right, Brook Green Gardens, you want to reproduce a metal, we've got the dye, where we can create that metal for you, build that customer relationship. Otherwise, a new dye would have to be manufactured somewhere else. So right. it really is not a situation where Metalcraft is looking to purchase these dyes just to use them to produce coins. It's a situation where the value is building a customer relationship. So that's the inherent value. I would also note that there are, certainly circumstances, and I do think that Clark Entertainment is a good example, where it's a master recording, and the purpose of a master recording is to make additional recordings, and those were the tapes that were at issue in Clark Entertainment, and that really is the only purpose of the master recording. I don't know if you've seen master recordings, but they're, on big Sony tape discs, and it's not the kind of thing you can just plug into your stereo system and listen to. So I think it is inherently very similar.
Oh, all right. I guess I did catch that nuance, but that's an important
Similar situation. And frankly, Your Honor, I do appreciate the concern that the court has in terms of violations of intellectual property. And I think, that's a concern that's always going to exist when something is sold that embodies intellectual property, because someone can always infringe on intellectual property. I think there may be ways to craft around it, such as happened in Clark Entertainment through some sort of language in the order. The other issue I'd like to point out, Your Honor, is there's My understanding is there's about 350,000 dies in total that are held by Northwest Territorial Mint. These are, 25-pound pieces of
each one's about 25 pounds.
Yeah, they're, and so something's going to have to be done with them ultimately, right? You know, is the estate going to pay to destroy them? I don't know that there's, a lot of funds available to destroy 380,000 or 350,000 dies. You know, the consequence then is that I guess it would revest in the either in Mr. Hansen or in the mint itself, and the consequences then would be, frankly, you've got an uncontrolled situation where who knows what happens to the dies if they're not dealt with in some reasonable fashion.
All right,
Your Honor, may I be heard on a distinction on the Clark Entertainment?
Yes.
I feel like the Clark Entertainment, it was very clear that they owned the tapes that the master recordings were made on. And that was very clear. Matt Clark owned the tapes. The master recordings were on those tapes. There was no underlying issue of ownership. And so I think that this case, I know ownership is not before the court today, but ownership is an issue on does the Mint own these dies or not. Our position, we are not conceding any of the ownership arguments, but in these instances, or in some instances, I think that the customers and interested parties actually do own the dies, which is different than the Clark Entertainment.
I agree, but I think for purposes today, I'm assuming that the trustee has an asset to sell.
Yeah. We're just going to assume that. I just want to, at least, I don't want to roll over and concede the ownership at all.
No, and everyone's preserved that, but for purposes of today, it's assuming the trustee has an asset, because if the trustee doesn't own it,
you can't sell
it. We don't get the 363F. We don't get the 363B because it's not an asset to be sold. But assuming it is, where I wanted to resolve that this issue first is, again, is this more like the Audio Fidelity or the Clark Entertainment case? The reality is, even if the buyer, whether it's Metalcraft or anybody else, knows that they can't use these without customer permission, the die still may have some value. I mean, I guess I look at it this way. It would be like if a book header was hermetically sealed and you couldn't read it unless you got permission of the copyright owner. Books still might have some value sitting on your shelf with the seal on it. That to me is like the Clark Entertainment case. The Audio Fidelity case would be, the book is hermetically sealed and there's a court order saying no one can ever read the contents. You can never unlock it, even with the copyright owner. And the court said, what's the point in putting that into commerce? You're just taunting someone to break the seal and violate someone's rights. And this is the hard question is, going forward, for some reason the Metalcraft sale went away. What I'm left with is an auction where it would, I assume, bid it up, would sell the dies to the highest bidder the court would have no control or relationship with or ability to make sure that there aren't any violations going forward. I'm pulling up here. Mr. Newman.
Yeah, if it helps, Your Honor, I would suggest that we did receive an overbid yesterday from and it'll be the same foreign purchase and sale agreement with the same agreements that Metalcraft agreed to. So I don't think we're going to get to the bid it up.
All right. Well, that's scenario. that might help a little bit in that we will have the party who's going to be next in the chain of title will at least be before this court, if that's Metalcraft or some overbidder. Let me go through the rest of my questions. So I did look at the amended Metalcraft agreement, and it's a slightly different from what you said in oral argument. It says that to the extent any die purchased under this agreement contains images that are the intellectual property of a prior Medallic customer, buyer will not produce a product using such dies without the express consent of the customer. It's that to that extent language that gives me a little bit of concern, because who's going to decide that? Is the buyer going to unilaterally decide that there isn't any IP, or the buyer is going to come to this court and ask first? I mean, I think I can address
that.
Yeah,
I don't think that was the intent, Your Honor. I think that, and if you read Mr. Moran's declaration, I think what he says in there is that they won't use the dies without the express written consent. And I think that can probably be clarified in the order.
I think so, too. All right, I just wanted to make sure, because, I saw that to the extent, and I want Mr. Moran or any buyer to understand that if I we go forward and I agree, I think whoever buys has to be subject to the Mint's own stated policy on its website, which is Northwest Territorial Mint/Medallic Art will not use its customers' dies or artwork without express written permission of its customers or for future customer orders. I think at a minimum, that's what would have to be in there. Which I based on Mr. Moran's declaration, he doesn't seem to have an objection to that.
Right. Now I will represent that, you know, certainly that's the trustee has been very upfront with potential buyers that would be a restriction.
All right.
So anybody buying them, at least who's in discussions right now, I think is under the, knows that they would have to abide by that.
Right. So what do we do though with the prospect of, again, Mr. Moran, or anyone, the buyer deciding that they want to turn around and sell the dies to somebody else next week or next year? How do we make sure that the Medallic and Mint customers are protected?
Well, you're right, and that's, you know, I understand that concern. And the one thing I would say, I guess, is that I'm not sure that that's a concern that necessarily this court and anybody can resolve, in the sense that there's always a danger if somebody has intellectual property that somebody's going to infringe on. So by way of example, if the Mint hadn't gone into bankruptcy and it just sold itself through a standard asset sale outside of a court proceeding, there would have been that inherent risk. Frankly, there's always an inherent risk that the Mint itself would use these dies in an improper fashion. So I'm not sure that there is any greater risk that the IP holders are bearing any greater risk based on the sale than they've always, the risk that's always existed, right? There's just always that risk that IP is going to be infringed. And I think we can do the best we can, at least on the on this sale, to make sure that there's the right protections built into the sale order. I don't know that, to address your question, if there's an out-of-court sale at some point in the future, in some sense, that is what it is.
All right. I mean, you make a good point. I mean, there's always that risk. And I probably, with a court order, can scare a buyer into complying more so than outside of a court proceeding.
I would agree with that.
Ms. Kaplan, let me turn to questions that I had, if any. You had raised in your objection that the sale should not be free of existing claims for copyright infringement. You're not arguing that those copyright, any existing copyright infringement claims should follow the dies, are you?
No, okay. We're just saying that we want to be able to pursue, if the buyer infringes on the copyright, they want to be able to pursue the buyer for any copyright damages.
All right. Well, I think that I think that would, that clearly should be the case. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I need to clarify that, any existing copyright claims or infringement claims or trademark violation claims are going to remain, that have occurred to date, will remain with the estate, and the buyer will be responsible for anything going forward. But I don't hear Mr. New arguing for anything different than that. I don't think any buyer would expect anything different from that. Mm-hmm. Right, Mr. New?
You're exactly right, Your Honor.
All right. Well, I think ultimately, I think this case is closer to the Clark Entertainment than to the Audio Fidelity case. And I think Mr. New's most recent point is a valid one in that there's always going to be some risk when an item that embodies intellectual property is resold or sold in the first instance that someone might violate the holder's rights, intellectual property holder's rights, whether it be a CD that someone improperly copies or a book that someone improperly reproduces. That's always the risk, and the owner of the copyright has to find the infringement and then bring appropriate action against the infringing party. I think Mr. New is correct. That risk is probably greater outside of a bankruptcy context because at least with a sale order, I can make clear that the buyer shall not infringe on any customer's intellectual property rights, and I can put in the sale order that doing so will subject the buyer to contempt proceedings in addition to any claims for violations of non-bankruptcy law. So that could be in the order. I'm going to go back and look at what you had suggested, Ms. Kaplan. And I can you know, put some language in here. I'm not going to follow this to the T, but ultimately what I'm going to do is I'm going to rule today that the trustee may sell the dyes, the Galvanos, and related items to a purchaser. It will not be free and clear of the intellectual property rights, but existing claims for tortious conduct or violations of any intellectual property laws will not follow the dies, so you can give that comfort to your buyers. The language that I came up with, and by the way, Ms. Brandon, is this going to be on? All right, so we've got a new program. It's called Court Speak, is that what it's called? So this is the first time I'm going to have it published. So it's, if you've practiced in Eastern Washington, you know, you can click on a little button and you can hear the audio recording of the hearing.
Oh.
And this will be up, I hope, by this afternoon.
Oh,
so
wow.
You don't have to like order an emergency transcript or, there's no guesswork. I'm a big proponent of that. When I practiced, I loved being able to download hearings in Eastern Washington. We're just experimenting with it, but it avoids, I mean, I think there's still some charge.
It's through Pacer.
It's through Pacer. So there'll still be a charge, but it'll certainly be cheaper and quicker than getting a transcript. I don't mean to put those folks out of business, and it's certainly not going to replace transcripts for purposes of appeal, but for purposes of being able to have what the court said, you'll be able to hear that and use it as part of your auction is tomorrow. Is that right, Mr. New?
That's right, Your Honor. It's going to be tomorrow afternoon.
Okay. So here's the language that I've generally come up with, and this is ultimately subject to further review in the final order, but it's going to be something along these lines of, I want the buyer to warrant and to guarantee that the coining dies, and that's kind of a defined term, and you'll have to define that. But the coining dies will not be used without the express consent of customers. And again, you might have to define that term. And that the buyer acknowledges and agrees to submit to the jurisdiction of this court to resolve any claim of unauthorized use of the coining dies, and acknowledges and agrees that unauthorized use of the coining dies, whether by the buyer or any agent or employee of the buyer, or any person who subsequently acquires title or possession of a coining die, will subject the buyer and all officers, directors, and managers of the buyer, two sanctions for contempt, in addition to any other claims or penalties that may be imposed under non-bankruptcy law. All right, and so let me say where that thought is coming from is, I want to impress upon Mr. Moran, whoever buys it, they're responsible going forward. Now, doesn't mean they will be held in contempt, but they need to impress upon any subsequent buyers that they better not violate this court order, because they're going to be held subject to it. Now, I'm willing to Mr. New, I'm talking more to you. I'm willing to discuss this type of language further in the final order that gets entered, and maybe there's some way of softening it. I don't have the authority to prevent the future sale of these items, and frankly, Mr. Moran passes the business on to another seller or to a family, whoever. That's going to happen. These dies are going to live on, but there needs to be some impression made upon your buyer, and then that person needs to impress upon any subsequent owner of these dies that they need to deal with the customers. All right, so that's the general idea behind that language. So again, for the record, I'm not wed to that entire language. I wrote it out, but that's generally what I have in mind that will be in the final order. And of course, this ruling is not precluding anyone from asserting ownership of any dies. And obviously, Ms. Kaplan, you'll be free to work on the form of the order too.
Thank you.
And maybe you and Mr. New might want to start working on that. Ms. Carey, you're back there. You're raising your hand. Why don't you come forward if you'd like to say something about this issue? And when you're done, you can sit up at the table with Ms. Kaplan, so you don't need to come back and forth.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Yes.
I actually have a question.
Yes.
Mr. New said there were 350,000 dies, and Mr. Calvert had told me there were 400,000 dies, and Mr. Hansen has told me there were over 400,000 dies. So my question is, what happened to the 50-some thousand dies that would be in that gap?
Right. And I think everyone's just using rough numbers.
Well, these weren't rough numbers, though.
Who says they're not rough numbers?
Well, the 400,000 was verified, at least by the two people, Mr. Calvert. That was early on. And I believe that that's why it's important to watch the inventory, because if dies, say, disappeared, then I'd like to know if mine was one of them that disappeared.
Sure. I don't know what to say, in that there are hundreds of thousands of dies, whether it's 300,000 or 400,000, that's not the issue today. Okay. If your die is being sold, you want to assert ownership of your die, then you'll be here on Friday arguing that your die can't be sold, and I'll rule on that. And if your die can't be sold, then it won't be sold. If it can be sold, then whether there's 300,000 or 400,000 or 500,000, I don't know why that would matter to you.
Well, I don't know if mine is one of the missing ones.
I just said, if your die can't be sold, then it won't be sold. If it can be sold, then it will be sold. And whether there's 300,000 or 400,000 shouldn't matter to you. I feel that you're here just trying to make a case against Mr. Calvert. That's not for today. No one has verified the number. That's why I'm asking you, who's verifying? No one has verified it, and it's not relevant this morning, Ms. Carey. It's just not relevant this morning. That's not the issue, whether there's 300,000 or 500,000. The question today is, can the trustee sell any of them because there's intellectual property associated with them? And I'm ruling that he can. That means, though, if you believe that your dies, you have some ownership interest that can't be sold, you can make that argument on Friday. And if I agree with you, then your die will not be sold, or dies. I don't know how many you ordered. How many are there?
Oh, I have at least two.
All right. So your two dies, you'll
paid for.
Right, and you will need to demonstrate that you own them. And I don't know if have you put in the record your proof of ownership?
Oh, I sent everything to Mr. Calvert, and I don't know if it has made it to the record, but
Well, you would need to file it with the court. He's not going to file it. So if you want me to consider it, you need to file it with the court. And you have filed things with the court, have you, right?
I filed things recently with the court.
Yes, and so if you have proof that you own one or more dies, you will want to put that in the court record. Let's see, I'm going to pull up what you filed the other day again. So you filed your objection, and then you attached the anonymous letter.
And that was not me who wrote that anonymous letter.
All right, but you attached it, but that's not proof that you own the dies.
I have a trademark name or on the die on the coin product itself are my initials.
So the only thing that you have filed is your what you call the notice of liens that you filed last week Wednesday. That's what you have, and I know that you're saying under penalty of perjury these are your dies. But if you have other written proof, you need to file that with the court as well, okay? If you do, and if you
it might take me more than that amount of time to get some hard copies. I do believe I recall emails going back and forth with the dies and pictures of the dies, and I
okay.
could perhaps retrieve an email faster than I could a hard copy of something.
And when did you have these email exchanges?
2005.
All right. And you think that you might have your emails?
I know emails exist, but I could more readily access the emails than
right.
I could the hard copies of, you know, going through files that
all right okay
are aged files
right. Well, let me ask Mr. New, so don't leave yet, Ms. Carey. So you know, again, today whether there's 300,000 or 500,000 doesn't matter. What does matter is how would we identify Ms. Carey's dies?
I certainly can have, you know, every die has a associated customer number.
All right.
And so I could find those dies. One of the issues, or I couldn't, but I can have someone at the
All right.
end.
So there is a customer number associated with every die.
Right.
Okay. All
yeah.
Right.
Every die has a number and it's associated with a customer. So then it just, we should be able to find them, especially if it's only 2005. One issue I should mention though, Your Honor, is what we're seeking to sell in the hearing on Friday is just the medallic art dies produced in the last 20 years. So I think, you know, there's going to be a number of potentially objecting parties, and we'll have to certainly clarify this, that their dies are not being sold as part of the sale. So,
right.
for example, I think Ms. Kaplan's clients were Northwest Territorial Mint dies, so those are not part of this
sale.
So that's it's certainly possible that Ms. Carey's and I will, when I get back to the office, have them look for the dies.
All right. So, Ms. Carey, did you deal with Northwest Territorial Mint or medallic art?
I'm not sure. I thought they might be one and of the same. I know one that Northwest Territorial Mint bought medallic
cards. Right, but who did you deal with in 2005?
Well, I hired Teresa,
okay.
who worked at Northwest Territorial Mint at the time,
okay.
to do the artwork.
Okay, so Northwest Territorial Mint is who you dealt with, not medallic. Wait, Mr. New?
I'm saying when I have them locate the dies, I can also have them verify, you know, where
right.
these Northwest Territorial Mint or were these medallic dies, and I can certainly let Ms. Carey know what the records reflect.
All right, but you dealt with someone named Teresa.
Yes, that was.
Do you remember Teresa's last name?
artist. I don't remember her last name.
All right. Well, Mr. New, if you could take that down as well. I mean, you probably with her employee records can figure out. So what Mr. New was saying is that for this Friday, the trustee is seeking to sell certain dyes, not all of them. Only the dyes that were with customers of Medallic Art, which is the Nevada company, Northwest Territorial Mint. Well, I mean, there's some argument that they were going back and forth, but these are different dyes that are not being sold on Friday. Nonetheless, if you have evidence that you own some dyes, you should get that into the court record for this Friday.
Well, I do have I have some coins.
All right.
Would that be evidence? I mean,
well,
with my initials on them, and
I mean, it would be some evidence that you have some coins that were made by that dye. But I'm trying to get proof that you own the dye. For instance, Ms. Carmody's clients submitted copies of invoices, and that showed dye, you know, $700 for producing a dye. That's the evidence. That's some evidence. Mr. Hyatt, who was sitting here, I think he left just before you arrived. He represented another company, and they had even more extensive agreements between the mint and his client. So I'm looking for some evidence that you're the customer, or that you assert that you own the dyes, because even if you're the customer, the position of the trustee, and I've not ruled on this, but the position of the trustee is that doesn't mean that you own the dye.
Well, okay. And I also submitted on my proof of claim, which I submitted it to Mr. Calvert, as he told me to do. He told me what to do. And I wrote in there about the dyes, what they look like, and that I have ownership of that. And that's under penalty of perjury, and
did you file a proof of claim?
I did.
All right.
September of 2016, but apparently I filed a hard copy and sent it certified mail.
All right, I'm gonna check that out, because if you've got that, if you got it in the
record,
I have
a copy of it.
I'm sorry?
I have a copy of the
So just so you know, I can only consider things that are part of the court record. And that's just a fancy way of saying that they've been filed, because if it's not in the record, I'm not supposed to consider it. It needs to be in the file, because if there's an appeal, the court upstairs, literally upstairs, reviews it. They can only review what's in the file. They can't review what you told me you filed. So I'm pulling up. I just wrote in Carey. Is Matthew Stewart Carey related to you? Matthew
No.
Stewart? You said you filed, is it under your name, the proof of claim?
Yes.
Carey?
That's correct. I have spoken with the FBI, and they cannot find that.
Cannot find what?
That proof of claim. I filed it with Mr. Calvert.
That's not filing it. Filing it.
Well,
means...
I mean, I sent it to him, and I thought that I satisfied the.
Well, there's been. I'm sorry. Well, there's been a lot of information out there saying how you file a claim. You can file a paper copy. You can do an electronic copy. Giving it to Mr. Calvert's not one of the ways of filing a proof of claim. And 3,100 people were able to file a proof of claim.
Well, I'm...
So the FBI is not going to find it if you didn't file it. And I'm not seeing it either.
No, I'm saying that they mentioned that just recently.
Who mentioned what recently?
Ben Williamson mentioned that. What I filed with Mr. Calvert, he does not see it.
Yeah, and neither do I. And giving it to Mr. Calvert, just so you know, is not filing it with the court.
I now know that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you've like I said, I don't see a proof of claim. So as of right now, the only thing I have from you in the court file is what you submitted on February 28th. Your document that you filed on February 28th, that's the only evidence that I have that I can consider that relates or would relate to your ownership claim. Are you also, you're asserting that you're also owed money?
Yes. Okay. Well, I'm owed my metals, precious metals.
Right. So
that becomes a problem.
You purchased precious metals?
I had purchased precious metals from other entities and stored them. And I sent a notice of storage as well. And
who did you send that to?
I sent it both to Northwest Territorial Mint and Mr. Calvert.
And when did you do that?
Before September 1st, right in that time frame.
Okay.
I spoke to Mr. Calvert, and he said that he wasn't sticking to that September 1st deadline, that the matter was going to probably take 5 or 6 years to complete. And
well, you know, Ms. Carey, Mr. Calvert, I'm sure, is going to say he's going to have a different recollection of the conversation. The deadline was well known. Like I said, over 3,000 people filed proofs of claim. There's a way to do it. And if you didn't follow the rules, I can't help you.
Well, I followed what he told me to.
Well, the rules say what to do. And, you know, if you
Well,
if
I
you
mailed
wanna,
it in
you
in
wanna,
time.
I'm sorry?
I believe I mailed it in time.
But you mailed it to him?
Yes.
But, all right, well. The form says that you don't mail it in to him. You need to file it. So I don't know what to say. If you say that you gave it to Mr. Calvert, it's not of record. It's not timely. You can file a late claim if you want. But that's a different issue. Mm-hmm. By the way, that's the issue of whether you're going to get paid is another question. All right. And I'm not going to decide that on Friday at all. Your claims are not at issue. The only reason I'm looking for your claim is if you attached some proof that you owned the dies. That's the only issue I'm dealing with on Friday. Okay?
Okay. But I'd like to reserve the right to file an injunction against selling any of my metals or what I claim as my metals or die.
You can reserve that right to take any action that the law, the rules, and the code authorize. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Carey.
Thank you.
I believe that takes care of the issues for this morning. Let me turn to Mr. New and then Ms. Kaplan. Do you have any further questions?
I do not, Your Honor.
All
I
right.
Think you're very clear.
And Ms. Kaplan?
I do not, Your Honor.
All right. So before we leave, then, let me just recap or get a summary of where we're at this week, Mr. New. So I imagine things are kind of moving along to the best you know. So tomorrow morning, you've got auction set at K&L Gates.
Right. It's actually going to be tomorrow afternoon.
Tomorrow afternoon. All right.
And at least as of this morning, that was my understanding that there will be an auction. So we did get a one overbid, and we're in the process of qualifying that, making sure it's a qualified overbid. It looks like it is. So,
all right.
Assuming that there is, there'll be an auction tomorrow morning. I'm sorry, tomorrow afternoon. And then we would obviously present the party. Whoever wins the auction would be the party we'd be seeking entry of an order to authorize the sale.
But there are two separate sale motions, correct? Well, that's actually three. The auction one, though, is the kind of the backup on the backup. You've got the Metalcraft one, and then the
industrial assets.
And that. So who had the overbid?
I'm sorry, no one overbid industrial assets.
Okay, so it's only on the Metalcraft.
It's only on the Metalcraft. So
right,
industrial assets will be coming forward with that.
All right. So and you don't anticipate an auction on the industrial purchase.
No,
all right. You have enough guidance from this morning?
Absolutely.
All right. All right then, Ms. Kaplan, you have any further questions?
No, I've got a lot of work between now and Thursday at 5. because people started receiving notices on over the weekend.
And I guess for the record, I should also address the due process issue, which you did raise, and I obviously take very seriously. I don't think the issue this morning implicates due process concerns. As the trustee has pointed out, the trustee has the right to sell the property that embodies intellectual property. But the owners of those intellectual properties are not having their rights affected.
Right.
That I'm going to make clear that the buyer is not going to be allowed to use their IP without their permission. So I don't believe that they're being harmed. That's distinct from the people that claim I own the dies,
right?
Because as a threshold matter, a trustee can't sell what he doesn't own.
Exactly.
So those folks who might assert that they own the dies, like Ms. Carey or your clients, need to be able to be on notice that the dies may be sold. And the trustee did send out the notice. I was not going to put March 2nd as a deadline, obviously. So you may not know until 5 o'clock on Thursday.
I fully expect that. I won't.
All right. Well, I mean, I think the practical matter is that there are not going to be lots and lots of people coming forward. I think the benefit of doing it this way, maybe a little more, little extra cost and maybe a little more pain, but identifying those people that do have some concerns, Mr. Calvert and Mr. Moran can address them individually and have been doing so.
Right.
And at least the three folks have been resolved, at least maybe four, if you count Mr. Ilg, one of your clients, Pan American, mm-hmm. Boy Scouts, maybe there's something can be resolved with Ms. Carey. But I think it's for the buyer's ultimate benefit to know who these potential challenges are, getting ahead of them and addressing them now.
Yeah.
So I think this is the way to proceed. And maybe a few more come out, but I think, worst comes to worst, I could exempt those for another day and probably doesn't prevent the sale from going forward if you're down to a half dozen or even a dozen folks that may object to some dies being transferred. Do you agree with that, Mr.
Yeah, I do, and I'm yeah. optimistic if there's, you know, obviously just a handful of objections, we'll be able to resolve those.
All right. Right.
I hope.
On a case-by-case basis. All right. Thank you all this morning. I appreciate your work, and we'll see you all on Friday. We'll be at recess.